Please be seated. Calling our second case of the morning, Robert Slumka versus General Heating and Air Conditioning. Could I? Morning. The lineup is 25 minutes, followed by 15, and 5 minutes in rebuttal, right? All right, please proceed.
Again, Your Honors, my name is Walter Stern. I represent Robert Slumka. This case is, to my knowledge, is the first case concerning an applicant or employee filing for a position. And Mr. Slumka did that, and General Heating and Air Conditioning, and ultimately the WRC and then all of the agencies and courts after that found they were without jurisdiction, that there was a federal preemption. Our position is that this court should reverse and remand because it is an unfair labor practice under 111.06 parent 1A, and also under the Act, the Right to Work Act, it talks about obtaining or continuing employment. Well, Mr. Slumka was...
Didn't Mr. Slumka first file a charge with the NLRB? And didn't they rule in his favor?
Yes, they... Oh, I'm sorry.
I know, it's, isn't it funny? Sometimes
in any event, they ruled there was a violation.
Right.
But essentially, I'm not trying to be facetious, they were good boys and changed the ad, and therefore they're okay.
Well, I agree that they didn't find a violation, but they basically said that they took his case and ruled on it.
Yes.
Okay, so if they took his case and ruled on it, why are we talking about preemption? Why are we not just talking about res judicata? It's all done.
Because the Right to Work Act and Section 7 of the Wagner Act are not the same. They're different laws, in our opinion.
Okay. All right.
So, counsel, I need you to explain to me how you get around United States Supreme Court case law that is really clear that an unfair labor practice is a matter for the NLRB. I'm citing Retail Clerks International Association. I'm citing Garmin. And that the only type of agreement that the state agency can adjudicate are actual negotiation and execution of the agreements described by sub 14B.
And
that's really the contract.
Oh,
and that's not, and I hear you saying this is an unfair labor claim that you are disputing. I read the complaint. That's what the dispute is. And so why, well, you want us to overturn or go against U.S. Supreme Court case law? Is that what you're asking?
I'm not asking that. In the Algoma case, and in the other case you cited,
So which case are you citing now?
Algoma. Algoma is one case, and that's what they relied on.
That's what who relied on?
Yes.
What are you saying?
I'm looking at the Supreme Court decisions that the court referred to. One of them, the first one really was Algoma, and then Garmin. What the court said is that unless there is a direct conflict, then there is. The state does have many rights in labor relations. And the Taft-Hartley Act under 14B gives a particular power to the states to choose a unfair labor practice or to adopt a right to work act. Now, at the time, there was 12 different states. Now I think there's 24 states.
I don't think the dispute here is whether there could be a right to work act. There is one. And I don't think the dispute here is whether there could be a claim under the Right to Work Act or not. The claim that's being made is that this particular type of claim is one for the NLRB. And again, I still haven't heard how you get around this language.
Well,
about conduct, arguably an unfair labor practice would be a matter for the NLRB under Garmin. And
because,
that is retail clerks.
Because the state adopted a law that gave a person the right to work, and it is a strong public policy of the state, and the decisions you cited talk about the test being, is there a direct conflict? And we don't see a direct conflict at all.
Okay, so you want us to disregard
no.
Supreme Court case law, because that issue of whether it's a direct conflict has already been decided, even the case you cited. You cited the Sweeney versus Pence. Can you show me in Sweeney where it says you have a claim? I mean, that's the case you cite in your brief,
I'm not
seeing that as not being preempted.
And I'm saying that the decisions you cite do not say that when you have a Right to Work Act, that you cannot proceed to enforce a remedy. And the state even says no person may require as a condition for obtaining, which means securing employment. And what they did here was say you have to join a union and 60 days to be employed. So therefore, he has 60 days of work if, at best. And I don't read the decisions that say that the NLRB if we just had the Wagner Act, if we just had the National Labor Relations Act, I could see that very clearly, that the state can't pass an unfair labor practice. But here the state did, and the state gave employees a right. And when the courts referred to execution and enforcement of a labor contract, they didn't say, the court did not say, that it excluded applying for employment. Now, you're implying that it did, but they didn't say that.
Okay. I obviously read this quite differently than you in what they said, that the only thing that the states can adjudicate at this point are the contracts, the actual negotiation and execution of the agreements in Section 14B. It's the contract between a union and a private sector employer regarding union membership.
Then I ask the court, why did the statute under 111.04, parent 3A, indicate no person may require as a condition of obtaining employment unless the word obtaining means nothing?
You're asking me why the legislature did that?
Well, I'm saying that kind of rhetorically, because they provided a state unfair labor practice. They provided a state definition of obtaining or continuing employment. And the court cases you cite didn't hold based on the Right to Work Act that is another federal law comes into play. That's a Taft-Hartley Act, 14B. I did the best to answer your question.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, we'll proceed. I've kind of made my argument. But in looking at some of the cases that I've cited, most cases have dealt with unions who want to get money and impose assessments, or a union like the Court of Appeals case that wants the courts to disregard the Right to Work Act. So I think the Justice is correct that there is no case. I wish I had one. Maybe we wouldn't be here today. But there is no case specifically saying because it's a fairly new law. It's 2015 we passed the law. The first case was 2016 that dealt in federal court challenging the law. And then we have Sweeney, which was an Indiana statute similar to ours, that dealt with the right to work in Indiana and some good language as to the purpose. None of those decisions specifically deal with whether or not you can have an unfair labor practice under a law that clearly, in our view, permits that.
Counsel, do you agree that there's the Employment Relations Commission says there's no allegation and no proof of any contract here that requires union membership as a condition of employment? Do you disagree with that?
Do I say that? I'm sorry, Judge.
The Employment Relations Commission in its decision work said that there's no allegation and no proof that there is a contract between General Heating and Air Conditioning in any union that requires union membership as a condition of employment.
We don't know that, Judge. And what I'm saying is that there was an ad in Indeed.com that said that as a condition of employment, within 60 days, an employee would have to join the union. Since we haven't had a hearing on the Right to Work Act, I infer, not assume, that the company would not have put that ad in there without a labor managed agreement. But the court is right. There is no agreement before you. Correct.
Did you have an opportunity at the hearing before work, though, to present evidence regarding the existence of agreement?
Not really, because the administrative law judge said that, in his view, he didn't have jurisdiction. That would be something, if you remanded it, I would definitely introduce that into evidence.
What was the hearing before work about then?
What
was the hearing before work about? What happened at the hearing?
At the hearing, we took some evidence, and that was it.
What was the evidence about?
The evidence was about the fact that under the initial ad said that any employee must join the union within 60 days. That came out.
Could you have introduced evidence about the existence of an agreement at that time?
Probably I could, but I was told there wasn't jurisdiction, so I don't think there was a full hearing.
In your complaint, did you allege that there was an agreement or that there was negotiations?
No, to answer your question.
Do you think that is fatal to the complaint?
No, because the ad said that you had to be a member of the union. Employers can't violate the rule any more than labor unions. They're both bound to the right to work.
In the earlier questioning by Justice Dalit, she made reference to the test employed with regard to preemption for the NLRB.
Yes.
And an exception to that jurisdiction is if there were actual negotiations or execution of an agreement. Since you've not alleged actual negotiations or execution of an agreement.
We're saying that, I understand what the court.
Sure.
We're saying that if that were the restrictions, that you have to have an agreement or absence of agreement, we've never denied in our briefs that that would not be, you know, if they were going to restrict it. But neither 14B or our 14B gave a right for a right to work law. But nowhere does it say that that would only, it only be related to execution or enforcement. And that's our position. Because the court never held that the Right to Work Act could not create remedies. I guess that's our point. In expanding on that, in Garmin, which I think is a good case to explain that under the individual situation, a state very well may adopt rules and regulations with respect to hire and employees, and that's exactly with what the state of Wisconsin did in 2015. And I don't want to continue to harp on it, but why would they say obtaining employment? Obtaining means secured employment. And the WRC has lots of regulations on how to proceed on a complaint. How would this harm in any way or undermine the National Labor Relations Board or somehow directly, as Justice Frankfurter said, in Garmin? How would this really harm them? I mean, this is a state law. It's a citizen of the state who followed that state law and who sought remedies under the state law. And I understand what's being said, but I don't see a direct conflict that's not recognized in Taft-Hartley 14B. In going further, in looking at the cases, as I said, there is no direct case, so I'm using the language of the statute and the interpretation of the statute. And I might say that you should take the plain meaning of the statute. No word is superfluous. And that word is significant in that it does say obtaining employment. It does say it's an unfair labor practice. And there is no Supreme Court case that says that in a right-to-work statute that you can't proceed under state law. None. I wish there was. I probably wouldn't have even proceeded with this case if there was an actual decision that said that. Thank you.
Thank you.
If it pleases the court, my name is Dan Kaplan. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Foley and Lardner, and we represent General Heating and Air Conditioning, which was the respondent at the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission hearing that heard this matter, and then that from which the subsequent appeals were brought. I'm going to address the facts as they arose to get here, and Attorney Kilpatrick will discuss in greater detail the preemption issues that Justice Dallet raised with respect to the NLRA, as well as Wisconsin's statute, the Employment Peace Act. Sorry, I leaned back. First off, on July 24 of 2018, Mr. Slamka filed a WERC complaint in which he alleged an unfair labor practice by General Heating requiring union membership to be employed, and he claimed that that was in violation of Wisconsin's Employment Peace Act or the Right to Work Law. On August 6th, 2 weeks later, Mr. Slamka filed a charge, as Justice Rogensack pointed out, with the National Labor Relations Board, which alleged a violation of Section 8A3 of the National Labor Relations Act, and claimed that General Heating had discriminated against him by requiring some sort of union affiliation in order to be employed. As you can tell, the claims are nearly identical. On October 26, 2018, after the parties, General Heating and Air Conditioning and Mr. Slamka, had submitted initial position statements as well as evidence to the National Labor Relations Board and the investigator responsible for investigating the charge, the investigator and the regional director issued a decision which dismissed the 883 charge based on a lack of evidence sufficient to support a finding of violation of the National Labor Relations Act. That was a merits determination. At that process, each side had the opportunity to submit sworn affidavits as well as documentary evidence. Prior to November 9th of 2018, so about a week or two later, Mr. Slamka was required to appeal that determination by the regional director, and he did so. He appealed it directly to the general counsel, and the general counsel then took under advisement that question. At the same time, the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission, hearing examiner Peter Davis, held an evidentiary hearing. Yes, an evidentiary hearing on December 18th of 2018. With all due respect to Mr. Stern, this was an evidentiary hearing, and it was not shortened, and Mr. Stern and the complainant at that time, Mr. Slamka, had all the opportunity that they desired to present whatever evidence and documentation they believed necessary to support a finding of violation of Wisconsin's right to work law. The hearing transcript is located at 613 through 109. It is some 80 pages in length. There were 8 documents and exhibits introduced by Mr. Stern at the hearing, all of which were received and taken under consideration. And in response to your question, Justice Hagedorn, there was no agreement submitted as an exhibit which contained a union security clause. Nothing of any sort of that was submitted at all. There were 3 witnesses who testified, Mr. Slamka himself during the complainant's case in chief, and 2 additional witnesses who testified during the respondent's case in chief. The elicited testimony from Mr. Slamka appears on pages 22 through 46 of the transcript. And Mr. Stern had opportunities for cross-examination of both respondent witnesses as well. At the conclusion of Mr. Slamka's testimony, Mr. Stern was asked if he had any further evidence or witnesses to submit in his case in chief. At page 46 of the transcript, I quote, "No, and the documents have already been marked and admitted, so we would rest." It was at that point in time that the complainant, Mr. Slamka, had submitted all evidence, all information that he believed necessary to prove a violation of law.
So just so I'm completely clear, because what I heard Mr. Stern say not less than 10 minutes ago was that the hearing really didn't take place and that the hearing examiner stopped it for jurisdictional reasons. You're telling us that didn't happen?
Correct. The hearing was approximately 2 hours in length. There was no determination made at the hearing. The parties requested and forewent closing arguments in lieu of submitting briefing. And the parties agreed on the date by which briefing would be submitted. And that the briefing would be submitted, I think it was, by January 14th. After the completion of the transcript was prepared and delivered to all parties for utilization. All briefing was filed by January 14, and on January 17, ironically, 3 days later, the General Counsel for the National Labor Relations Board affirmed the decision by the regional director dismissing the charge finding insufficient evidence to conclude that a violation of the National Labor Relations Act had occurred. On March 4th, so about a month and a half later, hearing examiner Davis issued his decision after full consideration of the testimony elicited at this two-hour hearing, after full consideration of all exhibits submitted and received into evidence, and after full consideration of the briefing of the parties. In that decision, hearing examiner Davis concluded that the commission could not exercise jurisdiction over the matter because the matter contained issues that were properly and exclusively within the board's jurisdiction, the National Labor Relations Board.
I'm going to ask you two questions.
Yeah,
during the proceedings before the WERC, did Mr. Slamka ever make any allegations regarding a formal agreement between your client and the union?
No, there was none made. And in fact, if you look at the decision from hearing examiner Davis, he was pretty clear. And he mentions, and I'm looking for exactly where it was, page 63, so it's in the record at 763. He concludes with, there is no allegation and certainly no proof that there is a contract between General Heating and Air Conditioning and any union that requires union membership as a condition of employment. So to get to your specific question, that issue and question was specifically addressed by the hearing examiner.
Thank you.
Who had the burden of establishing work's jurisdiction? And my second question is, who had the burden of establishing federal preemption?
So under U.S. Supreme Court jurisprudence, the complainant has the original burden to establish the WERC's jurisdiction for the matter. And at once a preemption argument is presented, it is up to the respondent to identify the preemption issue, and then it's actually back on the complainant to prove that the state actually has the right to exercise jurisdiction over the matter. So both burdens actually fall to the complainant in that circumstance, or if not a complainant, to the person who is alleging that the state has jurisdiction. With respect to the matter, after Mr. Davis's decision was issued on April 11, the commission, it was appealed, and on April 11, the commission issued a decision adopting the hearing examiner's decision. That's at record 8, 46, and 47. A petition for reconsideration was sought by Mr. Slamka. That petition was denied. That's found in the record at 9:20. Circuit court review was then sought, consistent with Chapter 227 procedures associated with administrative agency appeals. And that occurred during the period at the end of 2019. On January 9, 2020, the Circuit Court issued a decision at R19 which affirmed the Commission's determination. That decision was then again appealed as a matter of right to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals. That's found at Record 20. On March 11, 2021, the Court of Appeals issued a slip opinion which also found a lack of jurisdiction. In that slip opinion, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals specifically stated at paragraph 7, it is well-settled case law establishes that the type of claim Slamka asserts in this case has been preempted by the National Labor Relations Act. When they made that pronouncement, they were citing the Garmin decision from the United States Supreme Court. Thereafter, Mr. Slamka petitioned this court for review. This court granted review, and we had subsequent briefing on the matter. As I mentioned at the outset, Attorney Kilpatrick will address the more specific nuances of preemption, but I wanted to bring to this Court's attention a prior decision of this Court, which in my mind is on all fours with the issues in this case. And that's Arena versus Lincoln Lutheran of Racine, which is found at 149 West 2nd 35, 437 Northwest 2nd 538, 1989. In that case, there was a nurse who was working for Lincoln Lutheran, Nurse Arena, and she had been working with her colleagues relative to complaints associated with working conditions. That kind of conduct would normally be wholly protected by the National Labor Relations Act, either under Section 7 or Section 8. But in that case, the nurse, Ms. Arena, was in fact a supervisor. And so as a supervisor, the National Labor Relations Act does not protect that individual from discrimination based on union support or otherwise. Notwithstanding that fact, so that case actually has far greater bases to make an argument for a lack of preemption than this case. But notwithstanding that, this court noted there, that the gravamen of the complaint was a termination for essentially concerted protected activity. As that was the gravamen of the complaint, it was recognized that the National Labor Relations Act is the sole act that can oversee those kinds of complaints, and the board, the exclusive jurisdiction before which such complaints can be determined. And with that, unless there's any questions, I'm going to turn the addition of my time over to Attorney Kilpatrick to address a lot of the preemption issues, as well as Wisconsin's right to work law and how they interact. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel?
Good morning. Good morning. Madam Chief Justice and Justices, may it please the Court, Stephen Kilpatrick representing the Wisconsin Employment Relations Commission. This is a straightforward federal preemption case, and so I presume that we are here because of Mr. Slamka's claims that if this Court affirms, the Right to Work Act will be rendered meaningless and feckless for Wisconsin workers. Not true. And I'll give you three quick reasons why. First, a decision from this Court affirming the Commission's decision will do nothing more than confirm again that Congress has preempted from the states the field of labor relations. There is nothing unusual about that. Of the two types of field preemption in labor relations, machinist preemption, which is not relevant here, and Garmin preemption based on U.S. Supreme Court cases, it is Garmin preemption that controls the outcome. This is a Supreme Court decision from 1959 that this Court in Arena, for example, has already followed before. Second reason why you should not believe Mr. Slamka's sky is falling claims. Only because of the Wisconsin Right to Work Act was Mr. Slamka able to file a charge with the National Labor Relations Board and obtain jurisdiction, alleging violations of his right to be free from employer interference with the exercise of his rights protected by Section 7 of the NLRA by stating that union membership was a condition of employment in a job advertisement. Those rights, I note, he enjoys under both the NLRA and the Wisconsin Right to Work Law, 111.04 sub 2 and sub 3 sub A 2. That's the Employment Peace Act as amended by the Right to Work Act.
So just make sure I understand what you're saying. The state law and federal law, if an employer wrongly or falsely says you must join a union in order to work here, send your application here, that is actionable, but that needs to go before the federal, before the NLRB. And it's only in the event that there actually is such an agreement
right.
where that would be proper for work.
That's correct, Justice Hagedorn. And that gets to my third point, which is only because of Wisconsin's right to work law did Mr. Slamka obtain a hearing before the commission, my client, to submit evidence of a union security agreement between the sheet metal workers and General Heating, which would be likely an unfair labor practice under the right to work law. Again, 111.061E. But he failed to do that. And I do want to mention, if you look at page 21 of the transcript of this evidentiary hearing, that is under the record R6-33, Examiner Davis says, I'll also say, as Mr. Slamka knows, not that long ago, I issued a decision, and that decision is not in the record, but that's beside the point, indicating that all matters are preempted except for the question of whether a union and an employer reached agreement on a contract that had union security language in it. That's, again, page 21 of the transcript. So that's the beginning of the evidentiary hearing. As Mr. Kaplan pointed out, Mr. Slamka had every opportunity to introduce that type of evidence, and at the end of the hearing, there was no evidence to that effect. So while it's true that the commission had to decline jurisdiction over his complaint, alleging a violation of his rights to be free from employer interference with the exercise of his right that union membership be a condition of employment, as alleged in the job advertisement, there is nothing surprising or unusual about federal preemption to that state law. Again, federal preemption, the basis is the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution. And that's what Mr. Slamka's complaint seems to be about, is the Federal Supremacy Clause. As this court has recognized in Town of Delafield, state law that conflicts with federal law is without effect. It is preempted. Federal preemption occurs when federal legislation occupies the field. Here, that field is labor relations. That was recognized by this court in 1960 in Local 248 United Auto. That is cited by us in our brief, I believe. So 11 with second 277. So again, the National Labor Relations Act is, as amended by the Taft-Hartley Act, is the federal law that preempts most state labor relations law. Section 7, Section 8 of the NLRA are very similar to Sections 5 and 6 of the Employment Peace Act as amended by the Right to Work Act. What is important here is that Section 14B of the NLRA provides that nothing in this act shall be construed as authorizing the execution or application of agreements requiring membership in a labor organization as a condition of employment in any state in which the execution and application is prohibited by state law. That's Section 14B of the NLRA. And that is what Wisconsin did in 2015 by passing the Right to Work Act. It decided that in this state, we are going to prohibit agreements requiring membership in a labor organization as a condition of employment. And that opened up the ability for Mr. Slamka to have a hearing before the state, the Employment Relations Commission. That commission, state commission, has jurisdiction over such union security agreements. And even though there wasn't even an allegation in his complaint, Mr. Slamka's complaint, I believe in an abundance of caution, the hearing examiner allowed Mr. Slamka the ability to prove that there was such an agreement. And again, at the end of the hearing, there was no such proof. And for that reason, the allegations, the lack of evidence, required the commission to decline jurisdiction because the allegations in the complaint were arguably violations of the National Labor Relations Act, Section 7 and 8. And this court has said before, the state must yield to the National Labor Relations Board for determination of the merits of those claims. And here, in fact, as you heard before, that's exactly what happened. The merits of his claim to the NLRB, which significantly mirrored his claim to the commission, was decided on the merits. And so not only could there have been federal jurisdiction here, there was federal jurisdiction here. And the commission properly declined to exercise jurisdiction over Mr. Slamka's complaint. And I take this opportunity just to remind the court that we are here on a Chapter 227 petition for judicial review. It's an agency decision. Under Chapter 227 standards, the burden is on the petitioner to show that the agency's action was unlawful, an erroneous interpretation of the statute, and I submit that Mr. Slamka has wholly failed to do that. He has wholly failed to prove that the commission was wrong in declining jurisdiction over this case. So again, I just want to stress that, you know, why was there a hearing before the WERC? The reason was because federal law specifically carves out an exception for state jurisdiction in labor relations, and that is for union security agreements. So if you want to complain and litigate about the execution application of union security agreements, Section 14B allows states to do that. Many states across the country have done that. In 2015, Wisconsin did that. And that is the reason for the hearing before the WERC. And that was explicitly explained by the hearing examiner, again, on page 21. So again, Mr. Slamka had the opportunity. He provided no evidence that any union security agreement existed between General Heating and sheet metal workers, and for that reason, the commission properly declined jurisdiction. That concludes my remarks. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Stern, before you start, I think at best we have a misunderstanding, and at worst you maybe were not as forthcoming as you could have been in your initial statement. At least for me, I heard you say that there was not really a hearing in front of the WERC and that the ALJ there stopped because that there were jurisdictional problems. But Mr. Kaplan came up and went through everything that happened in that hearing. I think he said it was over a two-hour hearing, and then he talked about how it took a while for the decision to come out, and it wasn't until the ultimate decision came out that the ALJ ruled ultimately that there was not jurisdiction. So can you
clear that up for me? I'd be glad to. What I said is that there was a decision, there wasn't jurisdiction. And the WERC is saying that it's a nullity. We did have a hearing, and he said no jurisdiction. Therefore, he didn't consider the evidence.
You did have a hearing, correct?
Yes, we had a hearing.
And at that hearing, you had the opportunity to allege that there was a formal agreement between General Heating and a union, correct?
Yes.
But At that hearing, you also had the opportunity to present evidence that such an agreement existed. Is that correct?
Yes, but it also, under the Right to Work Act, says no person, including a company, may make, as a condition or in obtaining employment, the joining of a union. And that's what General Heating did.
I understand that, but how could, an ALJ ever find in your favor if you didn't even present the evidence that they would need in order to make those findings?
We did present evidence that the general based its decision in part on the ad that said you have to join a union in 60 days. That's what was proved.
At page 21 of the hearing,
yes.
See where it looks like the examiner said, I issued a decision indicating that all matters are preempted.
Yes.
And then carved out the question of whether there was an agreement between the union and the employer, here General
right.
Heating. And so what was reserved for you to have a hearing on was whether that agreement existed, and you had nothing to present on that, right?
That was not my understanding at all. What my understanding was is the judge or the administrative law judge was saying, well, you know, I don't have jurisdiction. That's what the judge said.
Well, I think what you
wanted... That's what he told me.
What you wanted from the examiner was for the examiner to basically hear your complaint about the ad and how the ad required
yes.
union membership.
Yes.
And what the examiner said to you was basically everything is preempted except for the union employer agreement. That was the examiner's interpretation. So as I understand your answer to Justice Kurofsky, you really were preempted from presenting what you wanted the argument
no.
to be.
No.
You were relegated to the presentation of the agreement between the union and the employer before this examiner.
We were, if the company said, you've got to join a union within 60 days.
That's what you wanted to argue, but
yes.
the examiner said no.
Well, he didn't say no. He asked a question. It was a rhetorical question. Why would he let a hearing go on? This is where I think it's kind of disingenuous on the part of the WARC. On one hand, you know, they're saying a preemption. On the other hand, the statute says no person, and that therefore my duty was to show that a person, a company, an employer, made as a condition of employment joining a union within 60 days. That was proved. That was proved at the hearing. So if you're saying that you're requiring an agreement?
I'm not saying that. I'm just reading what the examiner said
yeah.
before you really
yeah.
presented anything, and it was... We'll hear you on the agreement between the union and the employer, but we're not going to hear you on anything else because that's preempted by federal law. So I think that's how I read this, but I could be wrong.
I think that, like I say, the respondents have not dealt with the fact that there is an unfair labor practice. And is that unconstitutional? Is that void because it's preempted? And I definitely don't see that the Arena case at all. It didn't involve the right to work. And it was dicta at best. And I just don't understand that the wording of the statute, no person may require as a condition of employment, means you have to prove a labor management agreement. And I guess it's just a disagreement in what the law is, and what the law is with the Taft-Hartley Act, 14B. I think 14B created a law that said neither a union nor a company may violate the act. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. The court is adjourned. We will reconvene at 1:30 for the third oral argument of the day.